Good afternoon. Welcome to Hostess. So today there is some good news and there is some bad news. Which would you like first?
Good.
The bad?
The bad.
The universe is everywhere. There's no way out. The good news? Yeah? You want the good news? The universe is right here. There's nowhere to go. Nowhere else to go. So, did it seem like good and bad? No? Yes?
Good and bad.
And you, it didn't seem good or bad?
Why first was bad?
I don't know. Why did it seem bad?
What did it seem bad?
Because you're stuck here? There's nowhere else to go? I don't know. You? Did it seem bad?
Yes, because for me, because the universe has things that for me are good and bad. Although maybe I see them good and bad, and they are not good and bad. And bad. I have to take it and kind of only to have one side. But maybe that's helpful to me. That there is things that I think are bad and things that I think are good. Maybe to deal with the things I think are bad.
Well, when we say the universe is everywhere, there's no way out, it means that what I'm saying is that we have this idea that we can get away from things. We don't like it here, so we will go there. We don't like this feeling, so we will go to another family. We don't like this house, so we will go to another house. We don't like that bed, so we will try that bed. But in fact, we take with us whatever it is. So like you say, we take with us what we think is good and what we think is bad. Whether we are here or in Porto or in Paris or in London. Same thing comes with us wherever we go. Saying the universe is right here, it's really saying the same thing. But it's taking a different perspective, meaning we can relax. We don't have to think of going somewhere else because it's right here. We don't have to look somewhere else. We don't have to bring something else here. It's all here now. When I listened to the music, did you hear the music? Yeah. In that band playing that orchestra, there were many different instruments, and we could hear them. I don't know how many there were, and I can't say exactly which instruments they were, But if any of them had not been there, it would have been different. Each one had its note and its rhythm and its moment. And it was important that they each contribute to that moment, to that sound, to that song. The universe is exactly like that. Each individual aspect has its role and is as important as another and contributes something. And the universe is, as I said, everywhere and right here. And right here. And right here. So within you, the universe is expressing itself. You are a universe. And you are a part of what we call the universe. So if you are feeling angry, sad, bored, uncomfortable, happy, open, closed, all of those things, that's an aspect of the universe. One is not more important than the other. We can see that more easily when we think of the universe as something great and vast outside the sky, the stars, the planets, the sun. We can think, oh yes, okay, that's all of those stars are part of the universe, and it's vast, it's open, there are these many different aspects, it includes everything. But when we bring the universe here, we have a more difficult time with that. Because, as I was saying yesterday, we put up walls, we organize things, we organize ourselves, and we try to organize others according to what we think is the universe. Some organization is necessary. That music would not sound the same if they weren't organized. They have a piece of music, they each have their part, someone is directing it probably. And that makes a particular song. But within each person's role, the one playing the trumpet, say, if he doesn't give himself fully to that role that is his, something will be missing. We won't hear it in the same way. The same with the drum. Now what's wonderful is, when we listen to this talk, we will hear this music. It's a very particular moment that includes everything. There's no need for that music to be shut out. That's part of this moment. That's the universe. Everything is included. it's fairly easy to sit here and say that, and even to practice that, when we don't have anything else to worry about. If we had a baby who we wanted to fall asleep, and the music was playing, we might be wishing that the music would stop. Or if they were playing at 3 o'clock in the morning and we wanted to sleep, we might wish that they would stop. Because we have a very specific image of what we desire to happen. We want the baby to sleep, we want to sleep, we want it to be quiet. But when we're sitting here, we don't really have any specific idea about what it should be. Well, we probably do. Each of us has our ideas about how it should be. But we're in a situation where we have less control over it. We have to just let it be. And we are even, the point is to just let it be. It's not even so much as we have to. It's, that's what someone is sitting here telling you, let it be. Let everything come up. Listen to the birds, listen to the music. Those of you who came for interviews this morning, there was a sound that kept going off in the room, right? We just did it. It was fine. It was just part of what was happening. So, so when we have, as Claudia said, these ideas of good and bad, can we just include that as well? This is where we come to what I call yes meditation. Some of you have heard me talk about this. When we are feeling this is not good, when I'm feeling irritated, I'm sitting here and I'm irritated because it's too long, or I don't like the noise, or I'm hungry, or whatever it is, I welcome that. Okay, I'm irritated. And then I allow myself to really be irritated. I don't try to close it in and make it small. I'm like that trumpet player playing his notes. That's what his role is at this moment. If at another moment, when the music didn't call for him to play those particular notes loudly, then it wouldn't be appropriate, right? He needs to say yes to the moment when he's not asked to play, when there's a moment of rest in his part of the music. He says yes. I put down my horn. And then when it's the music calls for him to play again, he takes his horn and he plays fully, completely. He gives himself to that. He says yes to that. Same with us here. So, we give ourselves fully to sitting here. When it's time to cook, we give ourselves fully to cooking. Washing the carrots. That's all we have to think about. Serving the tea. washing the dishes, whatever it is, we give ourselves fully to it. That's really all this practice is about, is being fully engaged in life, whatever is presented to you. Take your place in the universe and be it, whatever it is. You don't know what it is, however. It's a little more complicated than someone handing you a piece of music and saying, here's your notes, you play it like this. We're doing it in 2/4 time. When it says rest, you rest, and when it says a whole note, you play a whole note. When it says a half note, you play a half. It's a little more complicated than that. Only in the sense that the music is in you. The sheet of music is in you. You are the sheet of music, in fact. So when I say the universe is right here, you don't have to go anywhere else, that's what I mean. You don't have to look at a sheet of music. It's much simpler than that, in fact. You just have to be. You're already it. We, according to the legends, the first transmission of this teaching, the first official transmission from the man whom we call the Buddha, this Indian prince, occurred when he came before a group like this, except that it was much larger. It was outside somewhere in India 2,000 years ago. He came before a group like this and he held up a flower. And one person in the assembly smiled when he held up the flower. And we say that was the first transmission from a teacher to his successor, who then himself became a teacher and transmitted to another. It's that simple, really. There's nothing esoteric or complicated about it. In that first incident, there was just an action and a response. No words. Nothing elaborate. Nothing fancy. No special robes, candles, incense, chanting, nothing. Just a flower and a smile. And two people. Now, the both of those actions, holding up the flower and smiling, were bold. Does that, you know, does that word exist in Portuguese? Bold? Same as in French. Okay. They were bold because there was no holding back. There was no, how would you say, holding back? There was no thinking, oh, this is stupid to hold up a flower, or, oh, no one will understand, or, I want to convey this, or, there was not even this flower is beautiful. There was just a flower, and he held it up. And the response was not, aha, I get it. It was not, I'm smart. Or it was not, what a magnificent flower. No, it was just, holds up the flower and he reacts. And that's all this is about, this practice. In some respects, it looks like we are making things complicated with saying we should sit this way, we should walk this way, we should eat this way, we should eat this food and not that food. It seems like we're making it complicated. But the point is we're trying to simplify, to really eliminate the extra things so that we can, we have a possibility to be aware of something else, which usually is masked by all of the extra details, the clothing, the possessions, the activities that we engage in. So through what may seem complicated, we're seeking to simplify. Now when, for example, when we do walking meditation, for example, there's the slow walking, and the intention is to fully walk slow, each step, one after the other, completely, one foot, next foot, next foot, next foot. And in fact, it's not one foot after the other, it's one continuous step. When we walk fast, it's the same. However, if you've noticed, when we walk fast, it becomes more complicated. Because we're used to walking that way. That's something familiar. And so we each have our ideas about how to do it. And so some of us are strolling. Some of us want to go faster, some of us want to go slower. Our mind starts wandering. We're just walking around, looking around. It's very different from the slow walk. Initially, we think the slow walk is complicated. And why are we doing this? But actually, we are much more present when we're doing the slow walk than when we're doing the fast walk. This is why there's an emphasis put on really walking fast. Again, it's given a structure. It's a different structure than the slow one. But again, it's walk fast. Drop the usual way of doing it. Walk fast. You don't have to think about anything. Walk fast. You're not going anywhere. You're going just in a circle. Walk. Just walk fast. I sometimes give this example that maybe won't mean so much to you because you've never done this formal way of eating, but there's a very elaborate way of eating together in the sitting room with special cloths and special bowls, and it's very ritualized, and the spoon goes here, and the chopsticks go here, and the cloth is folded exactly a certain way. At a certain moment, we do certain things with certain bowls. Very rigid, very structured. at one point, at the end of the meal, we have three bowls, we stack them all together, and we sweep off the cloth, so if there are crumbs. And then we move the bowls to the other end and sweep it off the other way. For many years, I thought this was stupid. I thought it was pointless. The bowls were at this end. I wiped off the crumbs. Why should I move the bowls to the other end and wipe off this cloth in the same spot? I already took the crumbs off. So I didn't do it. I moved the bowls here, I cleaned it off, and then I moved them to the middle and I waited until the next step. While everyone else was moving their bowls and cleaning off the crumbs. And I was very attached to this, and I thought I was so smart. And then one day we had, my teacher gathered us all, a group of us together, the senior students, and she wanted us to go through the rituals and review them and be sure everyone knew them. And when we came to that point in the reviewing the eating, I thought, ah, this is my moment. I can point out how stupid that is. And so I did. And no one agreed with me. And my teacher said, just do it. Just do it. And I suddenly was liberated from my idea of how that should be done and of thinking that it was stupid and I was right. Suddenly I was so free. I didn't have to hang on to that idea anymore. I could just do it. She told me to just do it, so I did it. But because she told me, and because I had that relationship with her, I dropped it. And I just did it. From then on, I was free when I was doing that, eating that way. I was not limited to my idea of how it should be done, or if it was smart or stupid, or if there was a point or not. I just did it, and it was very liberating. So, and each of these forms that we have here are like that. The same opportunity to just be free. You don't have to think about it. I could say, okay, we won't have a structure. We won't have a way of sitting. Sit when you want to. Don't sit. Eat when you want to. Don't eat. If no one wants to cook, then we won't cook. Go get your own food. Get up when you want to get up. Sleep when you want to sleep. Sit where you want. Talk when you want. We could do that. And we would think we were free. But we would each be a prisoner of our own ideas. And we would each probably end up fighting with each other to impose our way. And we would resent the others because they didn't clean up after themselves. Or they were making noise when I wanted to sit. Or they were sleeping all the time and they should be sitting. Or I don't like the food they're making. It smells bad. They're eating bad food. They're drinking too much coffee. They're going out to the bar at night. Whatever. Or, the other way, that person is sitting all the time. How stupid. They could be at the beach. Whatever. So we all came here freely because we were seeking something else. We were seeking something other than our daily life. Of course, we will all go back to our daily life, and there will be a different routine. We will go home and have our families, or our jobs, or not have a job and have to deal with that. We will have cars, we will have airplanes, children, whatever it is. So when I say the point of this practice is to function freely in our in life, to be fully engaged in life, that means functioning in our daily life as we function here. It's a different schedule in our daily life. There are different constraints. There are different options. There are different obligations. But can we approach it with the same open mind that when my teacher says, just do it, that's what there is to do at that moment. That's what is called for. If I resist what's called for, then I start having problems. Then I think I'm right, the others are wrong. My way is the right way. And then I become, as I said, I start fighting with people. I fight with myself, and then I fight with others too. Because I want it this way. I don't want it that way. Sometimes things are very obvious. Yvonne is coughing, so she gets up and deals with it. It's obvious. Raquel is cold, she puts on her jacket. Obvious, right? However, even when it's not obvious, the same principle applies. How do we respond freely to what is before us? How do we function freely within the circumstances that are ours? There is no set response. No fixed response. Because there is no fixed situation. It's changing all the time. When the band was playing, I don't know if they were marching past, but it was louder, I had to speak more loudly. When they're gone, I don't have to speak so loudly. Maybe you put the microphone here because of that. Right. If I were in France, I would be speaking French, probably. Different situation. So how do we know how to approach the moment? How do we know them? Well, the truth is we don't. We don't know. And the true response, I say true, the appropriate response comes from this not knowing. That's when what is truly appropriate can come. If there's a very basic example, if I am a carpenter, I'm sure you've heard this story before. If I'm a carpenter and someone calls me to come to fix a door that's not working, and I have an idea, I say, okay, the solution is always a hammer. And I come with only my hammer. And the door, that's not at all what it needs. It's stuck, like in the toilet upstairs, and it needs a screwdriver or something. Or it needs, the whole lock needs to be taken off and fixed. The hammer will do me no good. However, if I approach it with, I don't know what is necessary, I will see when I get there, when I am in the situation, then I will come with my whole bag of tools. And then I will have what's necessary. I will see what it's, and I will say, ah, the lock is not working. I need something to deal with the lock. And I will take the screwdriver and I will take the lock off. I won't even touch the hammer. That's not what is necessary in that situation. In our lives, very often what happens is we arrive at a situation, we meet someone, and we have an idea about that person, hammer. I need to hammer that person. Or that person is a hammer. Now, what would happen if we didn't have those ideas? I don't know. I'm meeting this person. I don't know who they are. I don't know what they, where they came from. I don't know what they're feeling. I don't know what they're thinking. And I don't know then what I'm thinking or feeling. I'm open. Then I have a possibility of some other kind of relationship that doesn't involve a hammer. It doesn't involve hitting the person or the person hitting me. Now, of course, if the person does hit me, then there will be some reaction, right? I will react to that. But I don't know in advance that that's what will happen. And chances are, if I come with that attitude of I don't know in advance, that person won't hit me. There is an effect. Like I said yesterday, there's a cause and effect. Someone in Paris who I know who runs a soup kitchen for homeless people. And there are 500, 600 people who come on Sunday at lunchtime to this place. And they are, many of them, violent. Some of them have mental problems. Some not. Some are just people who have lost their jobs, have nowhere to live. Circumstances are such that they have nowhere to eat. And some of the people who help my friend are people who themselves were homeless and now have somehow their situation has changed and they help him. Some of them are very violent and are not kind with the people who are coming to eat, which seems crazy. They were once coming to eat, and now they're not being nice to the people who are coming to eat. And so I asked my friend, so do you ever have situations that get out of hand, fights? Is it dangerous? And he told me the story of one of the people who was helping had a knife and threatened one of the homeless people with the knife. And the homeless people were very aggressive then with the man who had the knife, obviously. But my friend said that he, when he was dealing with the homeless people, he didn't have a knife. He didn't come at them aggressively. And even if they were aggressive to him, because he didn't react in an aggressive fashion, the situation was diffused. And that is a good example of what happens all the time. In very subtle ways in our relationships with others and with ourselves. It starts with ourself. So it starts with this universe here, and then it expands to fill the whole universe. In me, I have things I don't like and things I like. And I can be very violent with myself. I don't like feeling this. I feel small. I feel stupid. I feel not good. Or I feel wonderful. I'm great. I'm smart. And then everything in between. All of these nuanced things we think and feel between those extremes. What if we said yes to each of those things? What if we didn't try to eliminate them? What if we didn't say, these kinds of thoughts are really bad? They don't look good. They don't feel good. I'm going to eliminate them. And I'm going to make all the thoughts look like this. Does this sound like something that happened in Europe not so long ago? Does this sound like Auschwitz? Or does this sound like the Balkans? Does this sound like what happens in our cities, our towns, every day, with different degrees? Homeless people? No. We don't want them. We don't want to see them. Drug addicts? No. But it starts here with us, right? We do this to ourselves first. And there is the example that we use sometimes of, it would be as if the right hand were saying to the left hand, you're bad, I don't want you. Or if the brain were saying to the toe, I'm much more important than you are, I'm going to cut you off. Or if someone offers the left hand water, and the right hand wants it, and therefore will rip it away from the left hand. Or cut the left hand off so that it can have water. This sounds really stupid, doesn't it? Absurd. But it's not any different from this one universe that has all of these different parts that are in conflict with one another. And this one universe that has these different parts that are in conflict with one another. So when I say the universe is right here, you don't have to go anywhere else. You have everything you need. You are it. So you don't have to take from the left hand to say, serve the right hand. We have a saying in English that says, steal from Peter to feed Paul. Why would we take from one to feed the other? It's possible to feed both. The two are one, actually. So if we're stealing from one, we're actually stealing from both. So, so everything we do here during this week is nothing other than that. Every step we take, every breath we take, every minute that we sit, cleaning the toilets, cooking the food, it's a wonderful opportunity to just give yourself to whatever it is. You have nothing to lose. I could say you also have nothing to gain, because it's not about losing and gaining. If you had something to lose, then you would have something to gain. But you don't. Except, perhaps, yourself, which you don't need to gain, because that's what you are. Your life, we could say. So we say, appreciate your life. Everything is important. The bow is important. The way the bell rings is important. Each step we take is important. Every second when you're sitting on your cushion is important. Brushing your teeth, the way that you brush your teeth is important. The way you put on your coat is important. Everything. Every little thing is important. We say if you have even a hair of separation, it's as if there were a universe of separation. Meaning, if you say, okay, everything is important, but this is more important than that, then you're immediately into all sorts of different levels of importance. Some things require more attention than others. But that doesn't mean it's more important. Taking a breath requires less attention than chopping the carrots. But it doesn't mean that breathing is less important than chopping the carrots. That's why we sit and allow things to settle so that we can have awareness, so that our awareness is heightened so we can appreciate each thing for what it is. Even after one half an hour of sitting, there's some sort of heightened awareness. And after a day, there's another kind of heightened awareness. We don't have to do anything with that awareness. Just be aware of awareness, in a sense. Just be. Was there some question about the word for awareness? Or no?
I use consciousness.
But yeah, that, it's hard. In French, too, it's hard to translate. Okay. Any questions or comments?
You mentioned several things regarding this year. Could you say some words on the opportunity and usefulness of engaging with silence? The practice of being silent.
Ah, yes, okay. That's what you mean by engaging with silence? Yeah. I wasn't sure if you meant to engage, to be engaged with the silence, or to be engaged in the world silently.
Something more simple, just the practice that silence offers in the nature.
Okay. Good question, because I didn't address that earlier. We started the retreat in such a way that we were never all together, and we had to quickly move into sitting and then sleep. So, silence, there is silence everywhere all the time. In fact, by silence in this context, we mean not speaking with one another in the way that we normally speak, which it's an opportunity to step back, to take the famous step back that we take when we're sitting, from how we habitually function. How are you? I'm okay. I'm not okay. What did you think of this? Oh, that was funny. Yeah, it's nice weather. All of the kinds of things we would just say without thinking. It's an opportunity to, therefore, stay with ourself, look at why do I want to speak? What do I usually say? And why do I say that? What am I seeking in verbal noise? Am I seeking to be seen? Am I seeking to not be alone? So am I seeking to connect and therefore have someone with me? I don't know. It's for each of us to look at why we're what we are seeking. And when we don't speak, what happens? What do I feel? Do I feel uncomfortable? Do I feel really comfortable? Oof, I don't have to speak. I can hide in this silence. I don't have to expose myself by saying something which might be stupid, or I don't know what to say, so this is a way of hiding. Whatever it is, it's interesting. It also allows you to not have that, as with these other forms and rituals and structures, it allows you to be free. You don't have to think about speaking or not speaking. The rule is you don't. It's like me with this. I don't have to think about where I'm putting my bowls and what I will do next. I just do it. So here we just say, don't speak. I just don't speak. It's liberating. I can freely walk down the hall and not have to speak to the person coming towards me. I can freely sit at the table, have my meal, and not have to engage in conversation with people and think what I will say and respond to what they say and calculate then what would be a good thing to say and a bad thing to say, speak loudly so that I am heard, speak softly so that I'm not heard, so I don't disturb. We don't have to think about any of that. It also, like with the sitting and not moving, it allows us to be just present with what is. It takes away some of what often covers up what is. And by doing so, it even makes us more aware of what we say when we do speak. When we're sitting at the here, for example, and I give you the opportunity to speak, it's not the same as if we were not in this context. Everyone would be talking and saying things and exchanging and disagreeing and commenting, and it would be very different. The sound of your voice is even different. You hear it differently. And when you hear other people speak, you hear it differently. And then when you hear other sounds, you hear them differently. You can also think of the practice of not speaking in a retreat as offering support to the others. By not speaking, I will support their process, their practice of staying with themselves. I won't put them in a situation where they need to speak. Maybe I want to speak, but I will allow them not to. So I won't engage them in a conversation. So you're serving the others in that respect. You're serving the group. Does that
I wanted to ask you, you talked about reacting, acting in a situation according to what it's, this situation is, and not looking at it already with some ideas and just reopen it. And I was thinking that for me, for example, it's much more easier to do that in a retreat than in daily life. For example, when something is done that I don't agree or I don't like very much or that I think it's not very nice for me, in my daily life it's more difficult to know if I am, for example, if I know this person, it's more difficult to just bring what it needs to that situation and not reacting to things that she or he has done in the past or has said. And it's easier in a retreat because normally we are here and we don't know each other, from we don't work together or we don't are together daily, and so it's more easy to be open it and to just react, to just just bring what it's necessary and not be reacting to other things and but it's difficult in daily life to see when exactly what is the limit. Am I just giving the right response, or I'm already reacting to something that this person has done me, and I'm also bringing that, and so I'm having an exaggerated response, and I'm bringing angry, and but it's difficult to see the difference. It's, for me, it's really especially with the persons with whom I am more close to, in work or at home, because my tendency is not only to respond to that moment, but I am already thinking, oh, he's doing it again, and it's the same thing, so I'm more angry and more, and maybe it's not such a big thing, but I am already turning it in. And can we train ourselves so that we can look just at that moment and not bring in, I don't know, maybe we cannot forget things that were done or said, but how can we be open it just to what is happening and not bringing it?
What Claudia was saying is, we can all probably relate to this. And when she said, it's with people who I know very well, and so I have histories with them, and I know how they behave, and I have attachments, to emotional, positive or negative, with them. You know, it can be someone we love dearly, and it's complicated. Or it can be someone we really don't like, or we have a conflict with. It's really not different from a practice situation like this, except Well, maybe it would be like the difference between a cartoon drawing, you know, and an elaborate painting, you know, on the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel or something. There is more depth, there's more complexity, but the principle is the same. The notion of an attachment to myself, my ideas, my opinions, my emotions, my beliefs about the person, the situation, all of that, that very basic essential element of an attachment to myself is present here and out there, it's not really out there, but in that situation. And the same principle of sitting, allowing things to be, seeing the true nature of myself, that applies. Same thing applies. You ask if we can train, if we can. The whole point of this, of a sitting practice, is training, if you will. The more that we become aware on the cushion, the more we become aware in our daily life. Because it's not different in that sense. We take it with us, whatever, wherever we go. To expect our reaction in a situation that may be work or personal life, to expect our behavior to be the same as it is on the cushion is already having a fixed idea, because it won't be. It can't be the same. It's a different situation. We won't... I would not be sitting here talking like this, dressed like this, if I were, I don't know what time it is, but if I were in Paris on a Sunday. Usually in Paris on a Sunday, I go to work. I work at a newspaper, and I'm involved in producing a newspaper on Sunday at this time. So I'm not doing the same thing at all. I'm not saying the same things. If I sat in the middle of the newsroom, dressed like this, and started talking like this, it wouldn't be right. It wouldn't be appropriate. And if I came here and started behaving like I'm producing a newspaper, it wouldn't be appropriate either. But I can bring to the two situations the same intention of allowing things to be, saying yes, open, giving my full attention to whatever task is at hand, not clinging to my past opinions about the situation and not projecting into the future. I can bring that same awareness, that same intention to each situation. The result will not be the same because it's a different situation. And it's, you know, it's to have that expectation of yourself that you will be able to react at your office the way that you react in a retreat, you're not being very nice to yourself, because it's not possible. It's not even, why should it be? It's because we have this opinion that one is better than the other, right? And we don't like the pain, the difficulty that arises in the work situation. But if we opened to it in the way that we open to a situation here, something different would happen. Your colleague might not behave differently, or your partner. That's not the point. The point is how you are in that situation. what you bring to it, how you experience it. However, as I said, the more you sit and practice, the more it becomes easier to carry over what you think of as being benefits here into that situation. It's really like any discipline. Those guys playing in the band, they're practicing. And they're playing their horn over and over and over again. The football players, that's basically all they do, is they play football all the time. And they practice and they practice and they practice, and then suddenly they're in a match qualifying for the World Cup. But it's that match is not really any different than the practice. But they're able to function more freely in the match because of all the practice they've put in. And it's the same for us. The more that we put in time on the cushion, and it doesn't have to be a lot of time. What's important is the regularity. Then we can perform like a football player in his match qualifying for the World Cup. If those football players never practiced, they would not even be playing in that game. Does that? It's important to respect the differences, I guess, is the. They're two different situations, but the nature of the situation is the same. The universe is everywhere, but it manifests in different ways all the time. That's the good news and the bad news, as I said. Okay, what time is it?
1:20.
Okay. I guess we will end there then.